October 2017, Vasteras, Sweden, about 60 miles west of Stockholm. A Danish journalist from a TV program called Operation X approaches a large power plant. The imposing blue and white structure looms over the landscape, smoke billowing out of its chimneys. The journalist, who's accompanied by a cameraman, is both nervous and excited. He's been working on a documentary about fast fashion waste for months, and this plant may hold the smoking gun. Jens Nieren, the plant's owner, spots the reporter and his cameraman and flags him down. The reporter picks up his pace, waving hello.
Thank you for agreeing to meet me.
No problem. How can I help you?
I'm investigating claims that H&M is burning clothes here at your plant.
H&M is one of the biggest fast fashion companies in the world, ringing up $26 billion a year in sales. With close to 5,000 stores around the world, it's an industry titan. Nieren doesn't think much of this question, though. He's just eager to get back to work.
That's true.
The reporter is shocked. If this information checks out, he knows this story has the power to cause major damage, given that sustainable is the major buzzword in fashion right now. But the reporter doesn't have time to ponder his documentary's impact. He jumps right to his next question before the plant owner can clam up.
How much clothing has burned so far?
This year? I guess around 15 tons. It's been great for us. The plant has a mandate to stop burning fossil fuels in the next few years, so instead, we're burning clothes.
And these clothes, are they defective?
H&M told us they were. They said they only send us clothes with mold damage or too many chemicals. But we ran some tests, and everything checked out.
What do you mean by checked out? The clothes they're having you burn are perfectly good?
Nieren considers the question for a moment.
You could say that.
And how long has this been going on?
Since 2013.
The reporter reels. He's just gotten a career-making scoop, and one that threatens to dethrone the top player. He has an on-the-record admission that H&M has so much unsold inventory, they're burning their own product. And they've been doing it for at least half a decade.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. Consumers are buying five times the amount of clothes they bought in the 1980s. On average, Americans now buy a new piece of clothing every 5 days. Driving that surge
are fast fashion companies that mass-produced inexpensive, low-quality clothes. They built empires selling $7 t-shirts and $20 jeans that cost even less to manufacture. Style changes as fast as it takes an Instagram post to go live, and to keep pace with the hottest trends, competitors demand their manufacturers deliver cheap clothing at lightning speed. In our new series, four fast fashion giants face off: Zara, H&M, Topshop, and Forever 21. The global market is expected to grow to more than $30 billion this year, but that kind of serious money is running into some serious concerns. And it's not just knockoff competitors either. It's a rare pang of global conscience among people who think twice before ordering the $7 t-shirt destined to take up permanent residence in a landfill. This is Episode 1, Fire Sale. London, 1987. 25-year-old Jane Shepherdson enters her boss's office at the headquarters for British retailer Topshop. A successful up-and-coming brand in the UK, Topshop started in the basement of a department store in 1964. Now, nearly 25 years later, it has dozens of standalone locations throughout the UK and brings in millions of pounds in profits each year. With blonde hair and sharp features, Shepherdson has the air of a rebellious tomboy. In the last 5 years, she's worked her way up from checking inventory in the Topshop warehouse. Now, she's a buyer. It's her eye for style that dictates what Topshop puts on its floors. But Shepherdson has her sights set on bigger things. She hesitates briefly, waiting for her boss to look up.
I placed the order you asked for the jersey department.
Shepherdson's boss looks disinterested.
What did you decide on?
Shepherdson steels herself. She knows her answer will be controversial.
Tank tops.
Her boss snaps to attention, incredulous.
Tank tops? No one with any taste is wearing tank tops. Are you out of your mind?
I'm trusting my instincts.
And what makes you think your instincts are so extraordinary?
They're not. I'm very, very ordinary. I'm just like millions of women. And if I would buy tank tops, so will they.
You sound pretty confident that millions of women will like what you happen to like. Would you stake your job on this?
Yes. Yes, I would. They're going to sell. Soon every woman in Britain will be wearing a Topshop tank top.
Well, if the order's already been placed, I suppose it's too late now. We'll just have to see about your big gamble then, won't we?
Shepherdson nods curtly and leaves. Now, all she can do is wait. Shepherdson's instincts prove correct. 500,000 tank tops sell in 1 week. Ever since she started making her own clothes in her bedroom in Yorkshire as a teenager, she's been dreaming about a big break like this one. And the higher-ups at Topshop take notice. Within 2 years, she's promoted to head buyer. At last, she makes all the calls about which clothes to buy and how many. But now, there's even more pressure to get those calls right, because the industry is undergoing a massive shift. New low-cost retailers like Madeline and New Look in the UK and Old Navy in the US are putting pressure on established brands to decrease prices or to be left out in the cold. Its prices might not be as low, but Topshop is making a name for itself by featuring designs from trendy, up-and-coming young designers. And in 1994, they reach an important milestone: a new flagship store. Oxford Street, London. Two teenage girls wearing baby doll dresses, knee highs, and Mary Jane shoes enter the three-story, 90,000-square-foot new location for Topshop, an emporium so massive it will become known as Big Topshop. The girls gawk at the scene. Music blasts from a DJ booth on the third floor. They marvel at the space. Brightly colored, trendy clothing fills racks, But this isn't just a store. It's an experience. A groundbreaking move in the fashion world.
Ooh, it's like a nightclub. This is amazing. Wait, is that a manicure station? And food stalls? Like, this is unbelievable.
Excited teenagers rush to the fitting rooms with armfuls of fashion finds. Their hauls are a mix of designer brands and vintage pieces, as well as basics, including tank tops. The different sections have names like Freedom, Boutique, and Moto, meant to highlight different aesthetics and cluster groups of items that complement one another to create outfits. For these girls, who've traveled by train from Sussex to get here, it's a chance to feel like they're queens of style. They beam at each other.
I bet this is where Kate Moss shops. Totally!
As the 1990s progress, fast fashion strengthens its foothold as customers clamor for inexpensive items. But top shop buyer Jane Shepherdson believes you don't have to sacrifice style for affordability. 1999. Shepherdson, now 37 years old, sits in her office ready to make some big decisions. In the past decade, she's developed a reputation for her strong instinct for what will sell, picking high fashion looks and making them mainstream. Now, she's the company's brand director, but she's struggling to stay ahead of the competitors that seem to pop up daily. A young female buyer shows Shepherdson items of clothing hanging on a portable rack.
And these are some of the dresses I was considering.
Shepherdson grabs a stretchy, clingy, bright pink dress, the kind of thing one would wear to a club.
This is just ghastly. I was told they're selling well. A similar style sold 1,000 units last week. I don't care. We're only going to sell items we can be proud of. Tell me, would you be proud to see a woman wearing this dress?
The buyer sheepishly holds the dress up to her body.
No. Exactly. We are dressing the women of Britain. Let's dress them well.
Shepherdson flips through the clothes on the rack.
And these t-shirts.
She holds up a boxy tee with pastel stripes.
Someone would buy this. A lot of people would. But we're not selling it because it's disgusting. I hate it. I'm sorry. I was told to select some t-shirts. I'm gonna give you a piece of advice, okay? We sell clothes that you and I and our friends would wear. Sell what you think is beautiful. Sell clothes that make you go, oh my God, that's stunning. And maybe you won't make any money on that piece, but if a customer loves it, they'll come back next month to see what else you have.
Shepherdson pulls a military-style jacket off the rack and considers it.
Now this. This is nice. More like this. You have good instincts. You just have to trust them.
Under Shepherdson's leadership, Topshop is poised to soar to new heights. But Topshop isn't the only company making waves in the fast fashion world. H&M has spent the past two decades steadily expanding across Europe, and now the Swedish brand has 700 stores across the continent. They've got star power, too. Supermodels Elle Macpherson, Cindy Crawford, Naomi Campbell are the faces of their high-profile ad campaigns. And H&M is about to create its own nightclub experience in a place that doesn't give a damn about how British women dress. March 31st, 2000. A crowd waits on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, held back by velvet ropes. They gawk in anticipation at the new 35,000-square-foot, three-story H&M store. Shoppers have heard tales of the brand's cheap prices and fashionable styles, and a last-minute ad campaign featuring actress Chloe Sevigny has lured in young bargain hunters from all five boroughs. The doors finally open, and customers flood in, storming the racks. Two young women immediately start grabbing items.
Oh my God, I love this tank top.
She holds up a tiger print tank top.
How much is it? Only $17. Usually, I can only get one new thing when I go shopping. For that price, I can afford to get like 10 things today.
They grab more items from the racks. A plaid skirt, a camel-colored leather coat, a pair of drawstring pants. The clothes are a mix of runway knockoffs and casual streetwear. At first glance, many of these pieces would fit right in on the chic, affluent Upper West Side. That is, if you don't spend too much time examining the label. One of the friends points up to a display.
I need to have that paisley skirt. The one on the mannequin is my size. Ugh, the fitting room line is already so long.
Unfazed, the shopper starts trying on items right in the aisle of the store, considering a jacket in a full-length mirror. H&M Brass were warned New Yorkers are not the type to line up for anything, let alone $9 tank tops. But within the first 13 minutes after the store opens its doors, 2,000 shoppers enter the store, and they walk out with armloads of clothes. Competitors are worried. Stores including Lerner New York, The Limited Express, and even Bloomingdale's are taking notice of H&M's shockingly low prices. They know that if the company moves into shopping malls, still the mecca of budget retail in America, they'll struggle to compete. In what seems like a direct response, Bloomingdale's launches a new ad campaign, stressing style and value. It's a noticeable pivot for the high-end department store that has never seemed terribly concerned with affordability. And H&M is coming for the malls. The brand plans to open 100 stores across the United States, starting with the Palisades Mall north of New York City and New Jersey's Garden State Plaza. In 2002, Topshop's head office is London, brand director Jane Shepherdson's office. Shepherdson's just gotten off the phone and her head's spinning with the news that British businessman Philip Green has bought Topshop's parent company, Arcadia Group, for $1.3 billion. She turns to her colleague.
Philip Green, I can't believe it.
Well, he has the cash for it. He just held a 50th birthday party on Cyprus to the tune of £7 million. And you know who performed?
Wasn't it Rod Stewart?
Yes, and Tom Jones, too.
Philip Green has a terrible reputation. He shouts at the buyers and once threatened to throw someone out a window. And have you seen the man? Nothing about him is fashionable.
Well, like it or not, he's here to stay.
The change in ownership spells trouble for Jane Shepherdson's historic reign. She and Green do not see eye to eye. And if they can't resolve their differences, the entire empire she's built will be at risk.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, You deal with one vendor, with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One. At zoho.one, that's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps, you're licensing peace of mind. November 2004, Stockholm, Sweden. Jörgen Andersson, H&M's marketing director, and Rolf Eriksson, the company's managing director, stand in a showroom. They're facing mannequins wearing pieces from an upcoming collection. It's a collection that has the potential to launch the company to new heights. Andersson considers a t-shirt that features an illustrated image of famed Chanel designer Karl Lagerfeld's face.
This is not what I expected. Not at all.
Eriksson agrees. This is uncharted territory, a high-end collaboration for an affordable brand. H&M asked one of the most famous designers in the world to design an inexpensive line. The gamble might not pay off.
Well, I don't know what I expected, but it definitely wasn't a cartoon of Karl Lagerfeld.
Will our customers buy this?
I think they might. It's strange, but it's exclusive. It's prestigious.
The two men eye a sequin jacket on the next mannequin.
What's the retail price for this one?
$129.
It's aspirational. Our customers can't afford Chanel, but they can afford Karl Lagerfeld for H&M.
And we're starting small. A limited quantity of items. It'll make them feel scarce, exclusive, special edition. You know, this could revolutionize the industry.
It does just that. Lagerfeld's 30-item collection sells out within minutes at H&M's Paris stores and within days across the rest of the world. Sales skyrocket by 24% for the month. Customers are thrilled to be able to own designer clothes at a fast fashion price. Black and white avant-garde TV ads feature Lagerfeld himself promoting the collection.
Carl, is it true?
Of course it's true.
But it's cheap.
What a depressing word. It's all about taste. If you are cheap, well, nothing helps.
However, Lagerfeld is not pleased by H&M's plan for such a limited collection that sells out in minutes, leaving so many customers disappointed. But H&M has tapped into something critical. By producing a relatively small number of each item, it creates an illusion of scarcity and exclusivity that is almost an aphrodisiac for customers. The ploy is wildly successful. The t-shirt depicting Lagerfeld's face is the hottest seller of the bunch. Next up on the design collaboration docket, Stella McCartney. Frustrated customers are already making plans so they don't miss out. Meanwhile, back at Topshop, Jane Shepherdson sees the next competitive challenge. And it's not Carl, Stella, or any other notable fashion designer. It's potentially something far more devastating if she fails to respond. It's 2004, and Shepherdson sits in the office of Philip Green. A stern-looking man with thinning gray hair, Green resembles a character out of The Sopranos. His own simple, unremarkable suit does not suggest he is the owner of one of the world's biggest fashion brands. Shepherdson leans in, eager to update her boss on her latest achievements.
Things are changing, and it's all because of the internet. Before, the average person around the world had no way of knowing what styles were shown on the runways. Now anyone can see them with a click of a button if they know where to look.
Green frowns. He isn't interested in theorizing about the industry. He cares about his bottom line.
And what does that mean for our sales?
It means we have to be fast, even faster than we are now. Right now, it takes 6 months for a runway trend to make it to our stores. But if we take that long, those pieces won't be in style anymore.
So, what do you suggest?
Well, if we do this right, we can get runway knockoff pieces to our customers in 8 weeks.
Interesting idea. We'll see if it'll work.
I do have some concerns, though.
She pauses, choosing her next words carefully. Her relationship with Green has been challenging, and she needs to be strategic.
We're buying a lot from Asia. That's going to make our supply chain take longer.
It's cheapest to make clothes in Asia, you know that.
Right. I just think it may be wise to consider some more strategic supplier relationships close to home. That way we can get new clothes into the stores faster, and also the internet. H&M is starting to expand online sales. I really think this will be the future.
No, 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 we can't take the focus off our stores. They're iconic. Going to Big Top Shop for the first time is a rite of passage. Now, why don't you go focus on making me some money?
Shepherdson rises and begins to head out of his office. But she pauses as she reaches the door.
I don't like to compromise, and I really don't like to be told what to do. I need freedom to operate, to try new things. I can't have my creativity stifled.
She lets her words sink in as she closes the door behind her. Shepherdson's directness with Green comes from measured success. In 1999, just before she took over as brand director, Topshop made £9 million. In 2005, they make $110 million. And while she still has to answer to Green in terms of major decisions like online shopping and factory locations, she has enough juice to make a few key moves. First, Shepherdson secures the brand a spot as a key sponsor of London Fashion Week. Then, she launches Topshop To Go, a service that delivers a curated selection of items to customers' homes. She even throws in-store parties catered to the company's teenage customers. Shepherdson is riding high, but her success at Topshop will be just as fleeting as the fashion trends she sells to the masses. October 5th, 2006, Shepherdson announces she's departing Topshop after 20 massively successful years. The rumor mill immediately starts churning. Just 2 weeks earlier, she gave an interview stressing how much she loved her job. Insiders read between the lines and point to the troubled relationship between Shepherdson and Green as the reason for her exit. Some speculate that the final straw was a recently announced Topshop collaboration with Kate Moss. The supermodel is a close personal friend of Green's, and Green did not consult with Shepherdson first. Topshop denies these allegations, telling the press that it is simply time for a change. As Shepherdson contemplates her next move, Topshop is left to find its footing without her. And with industry innovations decreasing the time it takes to get a trend from the runway to the shopping mall, they're going to have to figure it out fast or be left in the dust. In our next episode, we take a look at the scrappy origins of Topshop and H&M, as well as Zara, a Spanish company with a particularly savvy way of doing business, and a new American challenger, Forever 21. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is episode 1 of Fast Fashion for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Aaron Connolly wrote this story. Voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect forever.